I want to start today by putting a deal on the table. It's a direct challenge to how you view your own freedom. And I want you to be honest with yourself because on the surface, this sounds like an easy no, but the more you look at the mechanics of your actual daily life, the harder it gets to turn down.
Is this the utilitarian bargain?
It is the ultimate utilitarian bargain. Here's the offer. You trade your ability to make choices, specifically your ability to make mistakes, to, screw up, to choose the wrong path, in exchange for the absolute guarantee that every choice made for you results in your maximum happiness. You never have to worry about picking the wrong career, the wrong partner, or the wrong house again. You surrender the agency, but you get the perfect outcome. Do you take it?
See, that's the trap. It really is. Because if I say yes, I'm essentially admitting that I'm just a happiness processing machine. But if I say no, I'm fighting for the right to be miserable. It sounds like a sci-fi premise or maybe, a Black Mirror episode. But what we're really talking about here is the central tension of our time: human autonomy versus algorithmic optimization.
Right. And we usually talk about this in really trivial ways. Oh, Netflix recommended a movie I actually liked. How convenient. Or Spotify knows my taste in jazz. But we need to zoom out. We need to look at what happens when we move from movie recommendations to, life path recommendations.
I agree.
To really understand the ethics here, we actually have to ignore the code for a second and go back. Way back to the 17th century. We need to figure out how to weigh getting what we want against deciding what we want.
That distinction is everything. It really is. It's the difference between the destination and the drive. We have to separate the outcome, the happiness, from the agency that's required to reach it.
So let's lay the philosophical groundwork. We're going to look at John Locke. Now, Locke came up with a thought experiment about human liberty that is deceptively simple. He calls it the locked room.
It's one of the most durable images in political philosophy for a reason. It just cuts right to the core of what voluntary actually means.
Okay, so picture this. You are placed inside a room, but this isn't a dungeon. It's not a prison cell with damp walls. It's a perfectly pleasurable room. It has everything you love. Your favorite books are on the shelf. The most comfortable chair imaginable is right in the center. The food is exactly what you're craving. Maybe there's even good company, people you genuinely like talking to. By every single metric, you are happy. You have absolutely no desire to leave because everything you want is right there.
It sounds like a pretty good Sunday afternoon, honestly.
Exactly. You are content. But here's the twist Locke throws at us. While you are inside, sipping your wine, reading your book, someone silently locks the door from the outside.
And you don't know it.
You have no idea. You don't get up to try the handle because why would you? You're having a great time. You are exactly where you want to be, doing exactly what you want to do. The question Locke poses is, are you free?
And this creates such a fascinating schism in how we define liberty. Because if you look at it from one angle, let's call it the experiential perspective, you are completely free. You're doing exactly what you desire.
Right.
There is no conflict between your will and your reality. Every wish is fulfilled. You suffer no constraint on your actions because your actions align perfectly with your environment.
But then you have the other angle. The reality of the situation. You lack autonomy because you cannot change your situation. The moment your desire shifts, the moment you decide, you know what, I'd like to go for a walk.
That's when you discover you're a prisoner.
Precisely.
Yeah.
But as long as your desires align with what the jailer has provided, you feel free.
This brings us to the critical academic distinction we need to make today: the freedom to get what you want versus the freedom to change what you want. In Locke's room, your operational freedom is maximized. You are getting the goods. But your structural freedom, your ability to alter the parameters of your existence, is zero.
You just don't know it yet.
You don't know it yet because you haven't bumped into the walls.
And this is where it gets uncomfortable. Because that 17th century room, we are building it. We are coding it right now. And this brings us to a modern thought experiment that really unsettled me when I first read it. It's called hyper-accurate LinkedIn.
Right. This is a scenario often used in AI ethics workshops to illustrate how this locked room functions in the age of big data. So imagine a platform, let's call the ultimate career algorithm.
Okay.
This isn't just a job board. This system has total unfettered access to your history. It has your college transcripts, sure,
Yeah.
but it also has your entire digital footprint. It has your psychometric profiles. It knows every email you've ever written, every GPS location you've visited, your sleep patterns, your network connections.
It knows me better than I know myself. It knows I procrastinate when I'm stressed. It
Yeah.
knows I'm terrible at math, even though I, lied about it on my resume.
Precisely. And the promise of this system is simple and incredibly seductive. It guarantees it will find you the perfect job. Not just a job you can tolerate, but a role that fits your cognitive and emotional profile better than anything you could stumble upon yourself.
It optimizes perfectly.
Perfectly relative to human decision-making, which we know is often flawed, biased, and, well, messy.
Okay, I'm playing devil's advocate here. That sounds amazing. Job hunting is a nightmare. It's stressful. It's inefficient. If an AI can look at my data and say, hey, you'd actually be happiest as a landscape architect, and it's right, where do I sign?
And that's why it's the locked room.
Yeah.
Because once you sign up, the system places you in that role. You're productive, you're well compensated, you're statistically likely to be happy. But here is the catch, and this is where we run into the fresh start problem.
The fresh start. This is the part that really resonated with me.
Data hates a fresh start. Data relies on patterns.
Think about the human experience of reinventing yourself. I mean, look at someone like Harrison Ford. He was a carpenter until he was in his 30s. Or Vera Wang. She didn't enter the fashion industry until she was 40. She was a figure skater and a journalist before that.
Right.
In a hyper-accurate world, those pivots just don't make sense.
Exactly. If Vera Wang's data says journalist and skater, the algorithm isn't going to say, hey, try wedding dresses. It's going to say, here's a better journalism job.
Let's bring it down to a normal level. Say I'm 22. I moved to New York or London. I have no experience, but I want to work in a high-end restaurant. What do?
You lie.
I lie. Or I embellish. I tell the manager I have experience. I rely on my charm. I fake it till I make it. And maybe I struggle for a month, but eventually I become a great waiter.
You fabricate a past
yeah.
to secure a future. You're acting against your data.
Right. But in the hyper-accurate LinkedIn world, the system knows I'm lying. It knows I have no experience. It knows I'm clumsy. It says, no, that is a suboptimal choice. You will fail. Hmm. It prevents me from making that mistake. It blocks me from the waiter path and nudges me toward, say, data entry because I'm 98% compatible with that.
And it's probably right. You might have been a terrible waiter. You might have been fired in a week. The algorithm saved you from that failure.
But
by preventing the failure, it also prevented the reinvention. It prevented the non-linearity of life.
That's the terrifying trade-off. Would you sign up? On one hand, guaranteed career perfection. You avoid the poverty, the rejection, the stress of the wrong job. On the other hand, you lose the ability to be someone else. You are locked in the room of your past data.
It's the death of the pivot. And if you kill the pivot, you kill a huge part of human innovation. Most interesting people are interesting specifically because they did something they weren't supposed to do.
So we can formalize this. There's an academic framework used in AI ethics that puts specific names to these feelings. We're talking about the conflict between structural freedom and operational freedom.
Yes. Let's break these down, because having the vocabulary really helps us understand why we feel uneasy about all of this.
Okay, start with structural freedom.
Structural freedom is the ability to decide about the kinds of things we want. It is the freedom to choose the architecture of our lives. Think of it like a restaurant menu. Structural freedom isn't about eating the burger.
No.
It's about having the menu in your hand and the ability to say, actually, I don't want anything on this menu. I'm leaving to go get tacos.
It's the freedom to choose.
Correct. This is what is lost in the locked room and in the hyper-accurate LinkedIn scenario.
Yeah.
You cannot decide to be a waiter if the structure says you're an accountant. The menu's been taken away, even if the food being served is delicious.
Okay, so then what is operational freedom?
Operational freedom is the ability to get the specific thing you want at that moment. It's the freedom to achieve. It's the elimination of friction. In that restaurant analogy, operational freedom is sitting down and having your favorite burger appear instantly in front of you without you having to wait or order.
So in the locked room, operational freedom is maximized. You want wine. You get wine. In the AI scenario, you want a job. You get the best possible job.
Exactly. The system removes the gap between desire and acquisition. But here is the equation that defines our future. The algorithm maximizes operational freedom. It makes us incredibly efficient at getting satisfied.
By systematically obliterating structural freedom.
Yes. The ability to define who we are.
That is heavy. And I want to escalate the stakes here because jobs are one thing. I mean, if I'm an accountant instead of a waiter, maybe I'll live. But let's look at romance. The source material brings up the perfect partner scenario.
This is the one that usually makes the students in these philosophy seminars really squirm.
Imagine an algorithm that assigns you a spouse. And again, we have to assume the tech works, based on every psychological metric, genetic marker, communication style, social preference. This person is statistically guaranteed to be a better match than anyone you would find yourself in a bar or on a dating app.
Right.
You will fight less, laugh more, have better physical chemistry, and a more stable household.
Sounds perfect. No more bad dates, no more ghosting.
But the condition is the same as the locked room. You are forbidden from dating anyone else. You cannot experiment. You cannot have that messy, ill-advised relationship with the wrong person.
See, this highlights the conflict so vividly. Because we have to ask, what is the purpose of dating? Is the purpose solely to secure the optimal partner? If so, the algorithm wins. We should all sign up tomorrow.
But if I look back at my own life, the relationships that didn't work out were just as important as the ones that did. I learned what I didn't want. I learned how to handle conflict. I learned how to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
If you handed me the perfect partner at 22, I probably would have ruined it because I hadn't gone through the wrong ones yet.
Exactly. You needed the friction.
Yeah.
This brings up the question of whether autonomy has intrinsic value or just, well, instrumental value.
Break that down.
Instrumental value means a thing is only good because of what it gets you. A hammer has instrumental value. It gets you a nail in the wall. If autonomy has only instrumental value, if we only choose things because we want the result, then the algorithm is just a better hammer.
It gets us the result faster.
Faster and better. We should discard our autonomy and use the algorithm.
But if autonomy has intrinsic value...
If autonomy has intrinsic value, it means the act of choosing is valuable in itself, regardless of the outcome. It means that making your own mistake is better than being handed someone else's perfection. It means the messiness of the bad relationship is actually part of the definition of a human life. And if that's true...
Then the algorithm is a cage.
A very comfortable romantic cage, but a cage nonetheless.
This leads us to what the researchers call the measurement problem, because we are building these systems. This isn't hypothetical anymore. Companies are trying to optimize our hiring, our dating, our consumption. So we have to program values into them. We have to tell the AI what to optimize for.
Right. And how do you write code for the value of making a useful mistake?
The source material discusses the units of freedom problem. Let's go back to Lockstrom for a second. You are in there, happy. If I reach in and take away a bottle of wine, have I reduced your freedom?
Presumably, yes. You have reduced the inventory of choices available to the occupant. If there were 10 bottles and now there are 9, you have mathematically reduced their option set.
Okay, so let's say that is a loss of 10 freedom units. But now, let's say I lock the door, I haven't touched the wine, I haven't changed the inventory inside the room, I have simply removed the potential to leave, a potential the occupant wasn't even using. How many units is that?
That is the nightmare for the programmer. Because practically, operationally, the occupant has lost nothing. They weren't leaving. So the loss is zero. But structurally, they have lost everything. They have gone from a free person to a prisoner. How do you weigh that?
It's incredibly difficult to weigh the value of the ability to change one's mind against economic or romantic success. How much autonomy are you willing to pay to get the perfect job?
Let's make it real. If the algorithm says, I can guarantee you a salary of $200,000 a year, high job satisfaction, and a great 401k, but you must give up the right to ever apply for a job in the arts or music, is that a fair trade?
I think a lot of people, especially people worried about rent or debt, would smash that yes button.
I think so too.
Why?
And that is what makes this so subversive. We might voluntarily walk into the locked room because the furniture is so nice. We might willingly sacrifice structural freedom for a maximization of operational freedom.
Because operational freedom feels like success.
It feels like success in the short term. It feels like safety.
It feels like winning. It feels like efficiency. Look at me. I bypassed all the failure.
But the cost is that we become static. We become creatures defined entirely by our past data, with no mechanism for spontaneous deviation. And spontaneous deviation, the weird left turn, the irrational choice, the leap of faith, is where almost all art, innovation, and personal growth comes from.
So if we step back and look at the whole picture, we are standing on a precipice. We often use the word autonomy really loosely, as if it's just one big bucket of I do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But technically, it splits into these two often competing concepts, the power to choose, structural, and the power to succeed, operational.
And as AI becomes more sophisticated, it is going to make us an offer. It will increasingly offer us more operational success. It will offer to drive the car, choose the movie, pick the career, and find the spouse. and in each instance, we will be statistically happier with the result. We will suffer less.
But we will be less the authors of those results.
Correct. We will be the beneficiaries of our lives, but not the writers of them. We'll be tourists in our own existence.
That is a haunting way to put it. Tourists in our own existence.
And maybe that's fine. Maybe being a tourist is great. But we need to make that choice with our eyes open, before the door locks.
I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. A sort of ultimate ethical dilemma derived from these lists. I want you to really place yourself in this scenario. If you were offered a life optimization algorithm that guaranteed you would always get what you wanted, the perfect job, the perfect partner, the perfect home, but strictly prohibited you from ever changing your mind or choosing a path the data deemed suboptimal, would you accept it?
It's the ultimate wager.
Do you value the perfection of your life or the authorship of it? That is the question we are going to have to answer sooner than we think.